Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So maybe the most interesting stories coming out of the Scott Walker recall election today are the massive campaign spending we now know about on his behalf from wealthy out-of-state conservatives, and that despite Walker winning 53-46, President Obama had a 51-44% lead over Mitt Romney in the exit polls among the same voters. So let's start there today with Nia Malika Henderson, Washington Post national political correspondent, and Matt Kittle, bureau chief for the Wisconsin Reporter. Nia, welcome back. And Matt Kittle, thanks for doing this on what must be a crazy busy morning for you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
Great to be here.
Matt, in the exit polling, the Republican governor, Walker, won by 7 points. But Obama led Romney, as I said, by 7 as well, 51-44. And more Wisconsin voters said the president would do a better job improving the economy and helping middle-class voters. One stat said 17% of Obama supporters also voted for Walker. How do you explain these mixed-up Wisconsinites?
That is a 15-month history lesson at least, which I'm sure you do not have the time to go through. I think what you're seeing, quite frankly, at the polls, and I think the exit polls show this, is maybe Democrats or those who supported Walker but didn't necessarily like how he accomplished his reforms in the state were not crazy about recalls. There is a recall fatigue in the state of Wisconsin. We have very, if you will, liberal recall laws in the state, which were founded really by the progressive of all progressives, fighting Bob La Follette. And they were founded for right reason, to end corruption. But you don't have to have a reason to recall in Wisconsin. And there is a big argument here among conservatives in particular, that Democrats really didn't have a reason to recall this governor. There's no malfeasance. There's no corruption. There is just a difference in policy.
They just didn't like his policies, and people were turned off by that as a reason to stage a recall. So, Nia, we see something similar polling-wise here in New Jersey, where Chris Christie is a divisive but winning Republican governor, a little Scott Walker-ish when it comes to public sector unions, but it's considered a lock for Obama in November. So maybe people don't see state fiscal problems and federal government priorities in the same way. Is that a lesson here?
That's right, and I think you've heard a lot of pundits and folks on both sides of the aisle say that Wisconsin is a test case. In Wisconsin, you had Mitt Romney send out a press release after the victory saying that this would spill beyond Wisconsin's borders and essentially be a referendum on Democrats everywhere, and that doesn't seem to be the case. I think what you're going to see Romney do is sort of a kind of attempt to play in Wisconsin, but it'll be more a move of trying to make Democrats spend more in that state. I think it'll be the same in a state like Michigan, in a state like Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are states that are traditionally Democratic, and there was a lot of pressure, obviously, on Obama to go in to Wisconsin and get in that fight. But I think they judged correctly that it was a bitter fight and one that was best left alone, and he didn't want to spend his political capital there. Same with Mitt Romney. I was with Mitt Romney in Texas before voters read the polls yesterday. He didn't say word one about Wisconsin either way. And then, of course, when Scott Walker came out on top, he released a pretty effusive press release.
Do you agree, Matt, that Romney won't play to win in Wisconsin, only play to make Obama spend money? No Republican, I gather, has won Wisconsin for president in 28 years. That would be Reagan in 84. But, of course, it would be a huge blow to Obama's Electoral College chances if Romney were to take that state.
Absolutely. Wisconsin isn't purple. It's bruised, as we've seen over these past 15 months.
Purple because it's bruised.
Yes, I mean, we are a very, very divided state. While Governor Scott Walker won by 7 percentage points, we are still a divided state. The Democrats here are a deflated party, but I think there are some national lessons that you can gain from this. But I think the exit polling does show what it shows.
Nia Malika Henderson, Washington Post, national political correspondent. And we have Matt Kittle, bureau chief of the Wisconsin Reporter, on some of the implications of the Scott Walker recall vote last night. Matt, I want to take a minute for our New York area listeners on the staggering campaign finance numbers, which probably have not made it that much around the country. Statistics now released show $30 million was spent on Walker's behalf compared to just $4 million for the Democratic challenger Barrett. Two-thirds of Walker's money came from out of state. Correct me if any of my stats are wrong. You know better than I do. Only a quarter of Barrett's money came from out of state. The law allowed Walker to accept unlimited donations. Barrett's were capped at $10,000. Unions gave Barrett most of his money. Walker's money came from very wealthy business people. Bob Perry, a Houston home builder, gave $500,000, the second biggest amount. Amway founder Dick DeVos of Michigan, $250,000. Las Vegas casino magnate Sheldon Adelson, who had bankrolled the Gingrich for president campaign, another $250,000. So in a one-to-one matchup, employers trounced employees, in a sense, in the political spending war. So what was the quirk in the law that allowed these unlimited donations to go to Governor Walker's campaign but not to Mayor Barrett's?
Couple of things there. First of all, to answer your question first and foremost, the quirk in recall law is that if a sitting candidate is recalled through that time period where there's a petition drive up to a certain point, I can't remember if it's the petitions are certified, but there's a certain window where you can raise unlimited money, and then you have to, once there is an election set, then you are bound by the same rules. Walker lived by those rules, and just like the senators, Republican senators and Democratic senators did last time around. So they were able to again raise this unlimited money. I will note, though, that we're talking about the campaigns themselves. Governor Scott Walker, his campaign raised $31 million, and you're right, it is a significant difference between his campaign funds and Tom Barrett's, the mayor of Milwaukee. But if you take a look at how much money came in from outside interest that represented the Democratic cause, you start having an equaling of that playing field. And those causes included organized labor in particular and other liberal organizations that were here not only in Wisconsin but elsewhere across the country.
Nia, what do you think the Sheldon Adelsons and Foster Freezes got for their money in Wisconsin? In turnout or general public engagement that they thought would benefit them, or any other way you want to measure it?
Yeah, I think it's all those things. Republicans were able to do really well in terms of turnout and engagement and energy and buzz around their candidate. And I think that's what you're going to see as well in this national campaign. Mitt Romney yesterday, he had about a two-day swing in Texas, raised $15 million over those 2 days. And I think in thinking about what the national implications are of this race, I think that's one of the takeaways. The Citizens United, this unlimited campaign cash is going to flow into these candidates. And last time in 2008, you saw such a disparity between Barack Obama and Senator John McCain. And I think this time around, Republicans might, in fact, raise more money through super PACs and, of course, just the candidates themselves. So I think that's going to be a real thing to watch in this campaign.
And turnout was huge in Wisconsin yesterday. I heard one report about some areas that had more than 100% turnout. Now, how can you do that without voter fraud? Apparently because you can same-day register in Wisconsin, and the people who were registered were mostly all coming out in some of these areas, plus new voters. So, Nia, do you have any reason to believe that the turnout was greater on Walker's side than the Democrat side because of the massive spending disparity, or was it so big on both sides that you can't draw that conclusion?
Right. I mean, it seems like both sides were so engaged. You know, unions knocked on tons of doors of Democrats and Republicans, and it seems to me that everyone just had a dog in this fight. Even people who, you know, wanted to go to the polls and say that they didn't like recalls. And so that's what it seems to me, that everybody was just equally engaged. Who knows if that's going to be the case in November? We'll see. I think Democrats are facing probably a little bit more of a mountain to climb in terms of getting their voters out, but certainly they're working on that to get voters reengaged.
And Matt, here is one emotional Wisconsin voter, a Democrat, obviously, but focused not on Barrett, not on the unions, not on recall, when interviewed with by a CNN reporter.
You say you're very disappointed. A lot of folks here outside the Capitol sharing your opinion tonight.
We're not just disappointed. This is the end of democracy. We just got outspent $34 million to $4 million. This was the biggest election in America, and I hope you keep me on tonight because this hurts us all. Every single one of you out there in the nation, if you're watching, democracy died tonight.
You're very emotional.
I'm very emotional because we all had a lot invested in this. This was it. If we didn't win tonight, the end of the USA as we know it just happened.
So, okay, maybe that's hyperbole, but is there any widespread, you know, look, when a system can give a candidate, you know, that much of an advantage, is there any widespread public revulsion over this system and what it might mean for democracy?
I think it's overstating the case. I'm on the ground here. I understand the emotion. We had reporters with the Barrett campaign last night. There was a lot of that. A lot of sadness. These people put in a lot of time and energy. I certainly don't take anything away from that. But democracy is alive and well in the state of Wisconsin, folks. It is alive and well. We had a record turnout. There's a lot of money that went into this on both sides. Citizens United certainly played a case in this. That allowed unions to spend a lot of money here as well. Ads and those sorts of things that came out.
When you take all of that into account, how close was the spending ratio?
There was a report. This was 3 weeks ago. I believe it was from the Wisconsin State Journal here in Madison that showed that if you took Walker and Barrett's campaign money and then you took all the people that supported them, all the organizations and groups, it was just about even.
Really?
Now, that could have changed over the last 3 weeks of that time. There's no arguing that there's a lot of money in this, and there's no arguing that Scott Walker raised a lot of money. But that democracy is dead because of the Wisconsin vote, I believe it's just the opposite.
And in the national media, this has been portrayed as largely a referendum on ending collective bargaining rights for public employees. Statements like this by Walker on Fox News last year.
What stood in the way time and time again was collective bargaining.
How much was that what Wisconsinites thought they were voting on? Collective bargaining, per se.
You're asking?
Yes, Matt.
I can tell you that in February of last year, that was the issue. In the Senate recalls, it became less of an issue last year. By the time we got to last night, it was almost nil, and the Democrats knew that. There was a report in Mother Jones magazine where Graham Zielinski, the Democratic Party spokesman, said through an internal memo, stop talking about collective bargaining. It's not moving the voter. We've got to talk about other things. They did that. They talked about the economy. They talked about this John Doe investigation that's been dogging the governor, although he's not been implicated in that as of this moment. They talked about the divide and conquer, a lot of different talking points, but collective bargaining did not make the cut in the final analysis.
That's really, really interesting. But Nia Malika Henderson from The Washington Post, there's an emerging buzz on social media today from Romney's top campaign official in Florida. His name is Brett Doster. In response to Walker's win last night, he tweeted, quote, pack it in, unions, it's over. Have you heard about this yet?
You know, I haven't, but I have seen similar messages and tweets from other Republicans who are essentially saying the same thing, that it's over for big labor. And it's odd in some ways because big labor hasn't had a good go of it with this administration in many ways. I mean, they had been in a kind of a low-grade fight with this administration over race to the top and some of the funding and rhetoric around charter schools.
Right, the Obama administration.
From the Obama administration. And you also hear Mitt Romney really tearing into unions on the stump, tearing into the National Labor Relations Board and that decision down in Boeing in South Carolina. But this is normal. I mean, Republicans, I mean, these are part of their talking points, the end of labor and labor, being a terrible force in terms of the economy. And so I think you'll hear more of that. But again, Mitt Romney certainly didn't think it was worth his while going into that fight. He had last been in Wisconsin in the spring during that primary. So who knows when he'll go there again.
But I wonder if this will explode today and have bigger national implications, because it was a top Romney campaign official in the state of Florida who sent this tweet. If Romney is seen as not just against, you know, something technical like the excesses of public employee health and pension benefit growth, which is a real issue everywhere, but hostile to workers in general, pack it in, unions, it's over, how big a deal might that be?
It'll be a big deal. And I think in Romney, you see a pretty cautious candidate. Again, he came out last night, praised this victory from Scott Walker and said that he's on the right track in terms of fiscal conservatism and reining in spending at the state level. But I think he's going to have to walk a fine line to not be seen as totally beating up on labor, because, again, some of those folks, those, you know, sort of lunch pail voters, he would need in these key states, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, if he has any hope to win those folks. And then he's got this issue also around the auto bailout. So I think he's got to be really careful with not seeming too hostile to big labor.
And does this mean, Nia, that Chris Christie and other governors trying to curb the growth of public employee pensions and health benefits will now go all the way Walker and try to end the rights of teachers and police officers to even bargain for these things as a group?
You know, I don't know if that's the signal that they will take from this. And I mean, you see this going on, as you said, in all these states. Illinois, New York has got issues with their unions and curbing some of the spending there, out in California. So I think we are going to see some real fights, not only from Republicans but also Democrats, having to deal with unions. But whether or not they'll go as far to the right as Scott Walker, who by now is a real hero, I think, among conservatives, we'll just have to wait and see.
And we'll be talking to one of those governors, Dan Malloy from Connecticut, later on this hour. And we'll be talking in our next segment, as we continue to follow the money trail, with Greg David from Crane's New York Business about Wall Street money, which went 2-1 to Obama over McCain, now trending nearly 3-1 for Romney. So that's coming right up, as we thank Matt Kittle, bureau chief of the Wisconsin Reporter. Thanks again, Matt. I'm sure you got little sleep last night and are doing 25 things today, so we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And Nia Malika Henderson, national political reporter for The Washington Post and the anchor blogger for The Post's Election 2012 blog. Nia, always great to have you on.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Greg David next. Stay tuned.